an important application of semiconductors and diodes are light-emitting diodes. So you see on the top different kinds of light-emitting diodes, and most of what you see when you're looking at a diode is just the packaging. So the light is coming from a small chip that's embedded somewhere inside, and it's connected to two electrical contacts. One of them is typically bound with some kind of a wire bonding to a chip. The chip must be a direct band gap semiconductor. And when you look at it in more detail, then the diode looks something like this. It's typically a layered structure, and you need various layers, even though you only need, for the diode, you think you only need P-type and N-type regions. But you need various layers because for light-emitting diodes, you want a certain color, and the color depends on the band gap. And you can't buy substrates of just an arbitrary kind of semiconductor. There are only specific ones you can get. You can get silicon, germanium, gallium arsenide, sapphire, but there's not really a lot of different substrate materials available. So the idea is you buy some substrate material and then grow different layers on top of it so that the crystal in the substrate is carried on into these materials over it. So the crystals have to be lattice match. You must find a substrate that's got the right spacing between the atoms and the right symmetry to grow a little bit, to grow a new crystal on top of it. So for instance here, aluminum nitride is grown on sapphire. But I know that at Infineon, they grow aluminum nitride on silicon. So aluminum nitride is hexagonal. It's got a hexagonal Bravais lattice. And silicon is FCC. So it seems like they don't have the right symmetry to match the crystals on top of each other. But if you take a silicon wafer that's cut on the 111 plane, then the atoms are arranged in a hexagonal pattern. So FCC is where you take spheres in a close-packed two-dimensional array where they're arranged in a hexagonal pattern. And then you stack, the 111 direction looks like hexagonal spheres stacked on top of each other like this. So if you cut it along 111, you see a hexagonal pattern that has about the right spacing between the atoms to grow aluminum nitride on top of it. Then you grow aluminum nitride on top and you start to vary the concentration of aluminum to gallium, and you can switch continuously from aluminum nitride to gallium nitride. So during the growth, you start to turn down the aluminum that's coming to the crystal to grow, and you increase the gallium, and you can switch from aluminum nitride to gallium nitride. So this aluminum nitride is not doing anything but providing a buffer layer to getting to gallium nitride, which is what you want for the diode. And then gallium nitride is a semiconductor that's used for blue LEDs. It's got a wide band gap. And sometimes the blue LEDs are just gallium nitride, and then on the surface of it, there's a phosphor, a white powder, the same powder that's on the inside of these fluorescent lamps. And this powder absorbs the blue light and then re-radiates red and yellow and green and some other colors. So that's happening here in these fluorescent lights as well. Inside the tubes, there's a mercury gas. And the gas is emitting a line spectrum that's characteristic for mercury. And this line spectrum has a purple line in it and a green line in it, I think. And if you just use that, the light in the room looks really bad to our eyes because we're used to sunlight, which has a wide spectrum. So there's this powder on the inside of the tubes, which is absorbing the purple light and then re-emitting at different frequencies. So the light that's generated has got more of a broad spectrum. And the same thing is done with gallium nitride for car headlights and things like that. There's a light-emitting diode that's emitting blue just in the frequency of the band gap, and it's being converted down to other frequencies to make it look more like a visible spectrum. In this case, they go from gallium nitride, which would be blue, to gallium indium nitride, which has a little bit smaller band gap, to get the color they want. And then there's an N and P doped regions to make the diode. And then this is all being grown on a wafer just as layers. And the end, they put a metal contact on the top. In this case, first nickel to make the gold stick to it, then gold to be a good conductor. And there's a number of problems. So one of the things you have to do now is etch through this stack to make one contact to the bottom side of the p-n junction. So that's what's happening here on the left. This top contact is a bit of a problem because you want electrical contact to the p-n junction, but you also need light to get through it. So if you use a thick gold layer at the top, there would be, you would generate light inside the p-n junction, but it wouldn't get out because the gold would block it. So it's important to use a very thin metal layer. So here, they're just using a thin gold layer. Or there are some transparent electrical conductors that can be used. But in this case, it's a metal layer. And then on top of that thin layer, there has to be a thicker one, because you can't make this wire bond here to a very thin layer. This wire bonding, you kind of have to melt the wire into a pad, and you need a thicker layer to do that. Okay, so this is the structure of a typical light-emitting diode. And there's still some